Hey, on today's episode, regards to the Leviathan, we're analyzing a fascinating police report registered against 20 Hasidim of Peshischa in the year 1823, the way to cultivate joy and happiness, and the differences between a couch and a shtender. I'm Moshe Sharman, and this is the Chavrusa Podcast, an exploration of timeless wisdom and ideas that have guided some of history's greatest men and women for over 3,000 years. There's a crazy story recorded about Rabbanim as he's walking along the Danzig River. He had business interests along the Danzig, running a timber, lumber, wholesale operation. I saw this story recorded in a book called Ma'amarei Simcha that I purchased yesterday from a secondhand bookstore in Brooklyn, New York, in Borough Park. I was in Brooklyn because my dear brother got married last night. Super exciting. It's a beautiful wedding. Great guy. Great bride. Good times. Families are excited. And I took the liberty of being in Brooklyn, visiting a Sepharim store, a used Sepharim store that has a eclectic collection. And I found this old book printed in Tuf Resh Ayin. It's a little over 100 years ago. And the book, the title is called Simchas Yisrael. And it's really split up into three different works. Ar Simcha, Ma'amari Simcha, and Torah Simcha. All about Reb Simcha Bonim of Peshischa. Reb Bonim's first name was Simcha. Three different collections of his teachings. So I'm super excited. And I'm browsing through it. And one of the stories in the second collection, Ma'amari Simcha, is as follows. He's walking along the river and he sees somebody way out in the river that is struggling to stay above water. He's drowning. And he yells out in German. He's familiar in five languages. I guess he assumed that German was the most universal language at the time that was most likely to be heard, and he yells out, Gris mir dem Leviosen. Gris mir dem Leviosen. I don't know how to pronounce it in German. But in English, I believe it's send regards to the Leviathan. Send my regards to the Leviosen. The Leviathan is a mystical fish that's going to be part of the main course in the great celebration, in the meal when Mashiach comes, Seudas Mashiach, Messiah's meal. It's going to be a great celebration. We're all going to want to celebrate. It's going to be an epic time, and people are going to be super happy, super excited. And part of the meal is going to be the mystical Leviathan. It's going to be part of the meal. So, as he's drowning out, he says, send my regards to the Leviosa. And then, the person, as he was about to go under, and he starts once more reinvigorated, until a passing piece of wood, piece of lumber, passes by, he grabs onto it, and he's saved. That's the story. And he said over afterwards, Rabbanim, he said over the story, and he said, I wasn't able to help him, first of all, on a physical level, because he was way too far. I wouldn't have been able to swim out in time. At first, I thought to yell out some instructions. You know, grab the lumber, grab this. Start yelling things. But it wouldn't have been heard because he was under distress. He was worried. He was, and fairly so, he's drowning. It would have bounced off of him. Instead, I told him a joke. Send regards to the Leviathan. It's funny. It's actually funny, right? Because if you drown, you'll probably meet this mystical fish somewhere. So send my regards. It's the Hasidic Rebbe, because we're waiting for Mashiach. So it was a funny joke. And once he had even a little bit of joy, if he even got a chuckle out of it, then he's able to release from that anxiety that's gripping him to be able to grab the passing lumber. Then I could direct him, here, I'll send you out a piece of lumber. You could strategize. But the first step is you got to break through from that grip of that cloud of despair and dejection. And it's such a good story, a segue from the last episode where we talked about how Bishiska put a high emphasis on avoiding sadness and bogging down and depression and really to jump out with simcha. We quoted, keep a simcha seitzeu, that a person leaves their personal exile. You leave your personal struggles when you feel stuck. You do that with joy. You need joy. You need humor. You need a way going forward. Happy to have had a lot of joy over the past few days. Not only was my brother getting married, but I got to spend time with my family and brothers and my father's. It's a great source of joy to myself and to anyone that encounters him. Keep a simcha seitzeu. So that's an incredible story. I don't know the deeper meaning. Yeah, I guess that's the deeper meaning, that we need to find the joy to be able to come out. And I think the way Rabbanim understood simcha, understood joy, if I'm understanding his train of thought here, is that it's not a destination. It's not, oh, I have to be happy, so I'll do this and this and this, and I'll follow this course and this recommendation, and then I'll be happy. But happiness is going to be the natural state if you could remove the pressures, if you remove the things that are bogging you down, then you'll naturally be happy. You'll wake up in the morning, you'll feel joy. Even if a person, God forbid, undergoes trials that are actually bitter. But that doesn't need to be a blockage of joy. It doesn't need to be an automatic, therefore you can't be joyous. It could be that you hit that bitterness and you hit that stage and you feel and you process it and you keep going on. So you could be, obviously, the guy drowning in the river wasn't happy. Wasn't happy. He was still struggling. But once you had that outlet, you're able to just have that sense of joy and of calm, even for a fleeting moment, you're able to break through. And the truth is, the MS says that I did see later on in the book, Quest for Authenticity, Michael Rosen actually does quote this story. He also has really good liners. It's poetic. He says that joy is, what's joy? How do you define joy? It's a sense that Hashem is breathing music through the flute of one's being. God is breathing music through the flute of your being. That's pretty cool. I like that. And he writes that in modern parlance, we would say that joy gives adrenaline and the energy to achieve something, whereas distress, mental, physical distress, contracts you. So joy gives you that push, that energy. The Chiddushei Arim, the first Gaon Rabbah, quotes from Rabbanim, or Moshe Leib Sasever, that the Torah says that if you do not serve Hashem with joy, tachas asher lo yavadta Hashem lekecha v'simcha, it's a verse in Deuteronomy, that this is the most crucial. This part of the Torah is one of the more darker parts, where it's predicting that if the Jewish people throw off the yoke of heaven, if they throw off their calling card, if they throw off their responsibility, then they'll be sent into exile. And what's the core expression of what they did wrong? Why did they go into exile? Why will they end up going into exile, which we're still suffering from? One of the many. Because they did not serve Hashem with joy. And the question is, ask your Rabbonim, that just joy? Joy is because they didn't do things joyously. It sounds like they were doing good things, just they weren't doing it with joy. They weren't doing it with geschmack. They weren't doing it with passion. And he said, yeah, all evil in the world stems from lack of joy, stems from despair and dejection. And the main thing that we got to focus on is revitalizing, re-youth. That's not a word. We got to inject youth into all our things. He points out an incredible thing. Not sure if this is still Rabbanim talking or if it's the Chiddushei Arim, the student of Rabbanim. He says that there's two things, two phases, youth and two metaphors, youth and elderly, somebody old. And he points out that there's a verse in the Torah, Koheles, King Solomon says, Melech zaken v'kisil, yeled meskein. So the Yetzer Hara, this is the Midrash commenting on that verse, the Yetzer Hara is considered old. Melech zaken is an old king. And the Yetzer Tov, the good impulse within us, the drive that we have towards spirituality, towards goodness, towards meaning, that's called a yeled meskein. That's called a humble child. So again, the impulse pulling us towards evil, towards our most base things, that's called a old king. And our good, our ambition, our dreams, our passions, those are called humble youth. And the question is, what's going on? So Rabbanim explains so beautifully that the Yetzer Hara, the things that pull us down, are the things that are maskin umeshan, the things that make things old and stale. Old and stale. That is the evil impulse. That is what brings you down. When things are old and stale and old news, and yeah, you're excited about this, now you're excited about that. It'll pass. Cynicism. A sense of just making things old, making things stale. It's a taiv, the good impulse, is moiled u'machadish. It's a young child that's humble, that's eager, that's ready to go out there in the world to do new things, to accomplish, and that's what we got to inject in all our lives. So, tachas what the Jewish people went wrong is they were doing everything, but they were doing it with a staleness. They were doing it with a maskin umeshan, with a cynicism, with, okay, this is what we do. And what we got to do is inject youth, inject joy. Not literally old or young, but it means the way you view it, your mindset is that it's a new day. This is great. That's the joy. Joy comes from viewing things anew and not getting down on yourself and saying, well, I'm this type of person and I've been doing this for so long and I've been doing things just by rote and I'm just that's who I am, you know? That's maskenumation. That's you're making yourself old. You could be 15 years old and you're making yourself into this old king. That's the Yetzer Hara, this old king that this is how I do things. This is who I am. I'm the type of person that does this. I'm lazy. That's who I am. That's the Yetzer Hara. Maskin umeshan. That's a beautiful idea. And it's the simcha, it's the youth, the joy that will take us out of it. Is the halacha, Jewish way of life, that's stated by a sukkah, wonderful, joyous holiday of Sukkot. Sit out in a outdoor dwelling place, sit there, eat there, drink, sleep, chill, learn. By Sukkot, we dwell in a sukkah. That's the mitzvah for 7, 8 days. What if a person is in pain by sitting out in the sukkah? There's cicadas flying out, or it's super hot, or super cold, or it's raining, or snowing. A lot of bugs. What do you do if you're in pain? Mitztar patur min ha-sukkah. That's the halacha. Mitztar, somebody who's in pain, is exempt from the sukkah. Says Rabbanim. Yeah, this is obvious. This is the whole elementary, fundamental element that we're expressing here. That it's got to be with joy. Everything's got to be with joy. If you're in pain, if you're in distress, if you're in despair, you're not doing the mitzvah. You're not in the category. You're outside. You're excluded. You're potter. It's got to be with joy. It's got to be with vitality. So it's embedded in the very halacha of the time of joy. That if you're not joyous, you're missing it. This following thing is pretty incredible. It's a complaint, police report registered by the Parchev police chief in 1823. Listed in the report, it's lobbed against 20 Hasidim of Peshitta, 20 followers of Rabbanim, and it's a police report complaint by the Parchev police. I don't know what Parchev is. Parczew. So it's some sort of Polish district. Parchev. I don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, so what was the police report? Hey, this is written by a PhD at Brandeis University, somebody named Dinner, who wrote a paper, an article called The Hasidic Conquest of Polish Jewry, Men of Silk. Okay, Brandeis University. Here, and he cites this police report. He found it. Complaint: they do not attend synagogue, but rather choose to celebrate services in rented houses, where sometimes throughout the whole night they make a lot of noise, celebrate services with various songs, jumps, dances. And it's frequently been seen that in the same place chosen for the prayer service, they also play games in which they're drinking and singing. And then they go out into the streets and continue singing and jumping. And the mayor of the city can't tolerate it. And therefore, they're being cited and fined by the police for disturbing the peace. It's such a great story. Ay. Rather, so instead of going to the big shul, which they felt it was very formal and maybe orderly and cold and whatever they felt, I don't know what they felt. I'm projecting. This is how I feel sometimes. But instead, they did it in. They would rent a home, or they would rent a basement somewhere. Classic shtiebel. This is the term shtiebel, Yiddish. It's you don't need a fancy building with great acoustics to have the most beautiful songs. You could do it in a rented basement somewhere. And that's what they do. And in the same place where they would daven and have the most incredible spiritual enrapturement, speaking with Hashem, in the same exact place, they could sit around with friends and they could farbring sing songs and share ideas. It's a great thing. Great story. Mendel Kaplan. He was a rabbi, a teacher, great educator in the Philadelphia yeshiva, where my father is a alumnus of yeshiva in Philadelphia. And Mendel Kaplan said, "Oh, so the story's like this: Mendel Kaplan once walked into the yeshiva late at night. He went to pick something up." And there were a couple of students that were hanging out late night in the Beis Medrash, in the main study hall, and they were sitting on top of the shtenders. A shtender, if you're not familiar with a shtender, it's a wooden contraption that's geared that you should be able to place a book on it, that while you're standing or sitting, it's at the perfect angle for your eye and your back. So you could pull up this wooden thing, sort of like a lectern, what they would say in English, but it's very versatile. And they were sitting on top of the shtenders, so they're pretty tall, depending on the height of the shtender. I usually prefer the really tall ones. They're about, I don't know, 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall. They were sitting on top of the shtenders, taller than tables. And when he walked in, they were all taken aback, because now all of a sudden the rabbi's walking in. They thought they were just, alone, just the students. And the rabbi walks in, and they quickly jump to attention and stand straight. Rabbi Kaplan turns to them and says, No, go back onto the shtender. The point is that you should be so comfortable in the yeshiva. You should be so comfortable learning Torah that this is like your living room. So you're sitting on the couch. Right, that top of the shtender is like your couch. That's what it should be. It should be to a point where you feel that this is natural, where it's not compartmentalized, that I have me who I am when I'm sitting in yeshiva and learning from the Gemara, and then I have who I am when I'm on my couch. I am who I am when I walk into the shul, and I am a different person when I'm in business, when I'm in school, in university. The point is to integrate it and to make it one. It's funny that the police report in this small town in Poland is citing them that in the So it wasn't just the noise. The noise is okay. That's a fair, fair complaint and fair reason to fine. But in the police report, they're also critiquing their religiosity and saying that they're not going to the synagogue, but they're going to the rented houses, making noise, and in the same place that they chose to daven prayer service, they're also playing games and singing and fabbringing. It's an incredible thing. Rabbi Rosen adds in the book, he says that in the world of Peshitta, joy is not some feel-good factor. It doesn't just mean, oh, I'm happy because I feel good, but it's real happiness that comes from being connected with Hashem, that you believe there's a umbilical cord between humanity and Hashem that cannot be severed. And when you have that feeling, when you have that feeling of connection, so then it doesn't matter if you're playing cards, if you're learning Torah, if you're davening, if you're sleeping, you always have that sense of joy, that sense of connection. And it's awareness, and it's an awareness of that kedusha, of that holiness, a loved one responding to the lover. There's something there. It's an extension of holiness in the words of the Kotzker Rebbe. I really think that this is a imperative issue that's as relevant today as it was in Peshitta in 1823 when they lobbed that police report. There's a great push, for whatever reason, to sort of create these dichotomies and binary yeses or nos, in or out, in shul or out of shul. And as a result of that, it seems to me that a lot of the ins or the yeses or the shuls, it becomes very regimented and very curated in a certain way, and it has to be that way. And if you're somewhat beyond that pale, it's a threat to that dichotomy. Okay, because if this is the proper decorum that we're going for, which of course it's motivated by great things, right? You want to have proper decorum, you want to have seriousness, you want to have an earnestness in a shul, for example. But when it becomes so systemized, formalized, it has to be this way. And then as soon as somebody is quote unquote colorful, I think it's a good metaphor, colorful, so then it undermines that whole dichotomy of no, this is a different place than your living room, that the shender is different than the couch. Right, so if sitting on the shtender, if that's viewed as a break in the decorum, and then you put a stop to it because it's a break in the decorum, so then that further emphasizes that dichotomy and it further creates division between who you are at home, who you are in school, who you are with. And it creates this division where you could have such a concept where, like, okay, I wear my yarmulke when I'm in shul and not when I'm out of shul. Or I did my religious thing for the day, I checked off the box. You could have, it could turn it into a checklist. Because when it becomes different from who I am, it's not the essential me, it's something that I do when I'm over there. So then I did my thing, I did my hour, I did my 6 hours, whatever it is, and then it's done. And then it becomes something that isn't a source of joy. It could turn into a source of duty that I need to fulfill. And it no longer fills me with that feeling of connectedness. And maybe our response to the police report is to say, yeah, you know, okay, we'll limit the noise. And we'll try not to wake up the neighbors, or we'll find a place where the neighbors are all into this too, where we'll all get into a space that doesn't matter if we're on top of the shtender, if we're on bottom of the shtender, if we're in the basement, if we're in the most beautiful shul in the world. And of course we should beautify our shuls, and that has great precedent that the shul should be the tallest in the city, it should be the most beautiful, the most glorified, Beis Hashem Neilech, great. But in the greatest shul, in the basement, there's a sense of joy, there's a sense
of excitement that when you walk in, you feel like, this is my muckum. This is my place. I feel comfortable here. The same way I would feel on my living room couch. This is something natural, and it's good, and it's happy, and it's exciting. And you don't have to feel constricted and bogged down and nervous and pressured. But it could just be that sense of connection, and I feel connected here. I feel good. And that in itself, when that rolls over to all aspects in Judaism, it rolls over to all aspects in our lives. This is good. And this, you go to a wedding, and the wedding could be, you could get caught up in the details and what if this happens, and what if this happens, and when are we going here, and who's going now, and the details itself, that you need the details of the wedding because you need some structure. The wedding needs the structure, or else it would just be one blob of time. So you have the structure, but don't get caught up in the structure. Don't let the structure dictate the night. The structure is secondary. The primary thing is you're getting married. This is awesome. This is amazing. You're happy. This is a family joy. It's friends. Everybody here is happy. It's beautiful. And not to get caught up in the details. Just to be there. And this is amazing. It's a good time. And fine, this dish came out that way. And this person walked that way. And they looked here in this order and this seat. Those are all secondary. Those are all there in order to provide structure so that the internal message of the night could exude and you could tap into that energy. And the same is true in Judaism, and the same is true in our lives, that all the details, all the structures that are in place need to be greater than the structure itself. The structure can't exist just for the sake of structure, because that's going to turn it into a bare bones event that rips out the heart of it. Hashem wants the heart, wants what's real, and the structures of Judaism has to be leading to something greater than the structure itself. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Charusa. If you enjoyed, before you even subscribe and rate it 5 stars and review and all that, and listen to the other episodes, please reach out to me. Let me know your thoughts, connections, ideas, questions, critiques. My number is 347-893-4467. charusapodcast@gmail.com or across social media channels. Thank you. Have a wonderful day overflowing with happiness.